Good morning, everyone. So I'm Jin Yilao. Something like my official name, but I go by Jin. I'm from the 5th campus of Santa Barbara, from the physics department. So first of all, I'd like to thank the college for inviting me and for organizing this conference. I think this is a great for the community. And for me, it's really a pleasure and honor to be here and meet the...
You're being recorded, so
everything you say can be used.
We have a record of everything you say.
I have to be extra careful. So, I'm just pleased to be here and to meet the authors of so many papers. Whose papers I read again and again and again and still don't have a clue.
She's talking about theoretical papers.
So today I'm going to present some very recent experimental data on phase coherent tile transport in graphene helios using bilayer graphene. So let me emphasize that my group is new to this community, and our data are very, very recent. So we welcome a critique and discussion of data interpretation. So here's a brief outline of the talk. I'll begin with a brief motivation of the graphene research, although I imagine most of us here do not need any more motivation. I'll follow by a brief discussion of device fabrication procedures and proceed to the discussion of the data. So data can be roughly divided into two categories. The first category is a graphene coupled to normal electrode. So I will address this issue of minimum conductivity in graphene, which we all know is discrepancy of missing bicoupled. And hopefully our data will shed some light on this controversy. So, and then we will talk about our experimental evidence for ballistic phase coherent transport in graphene. In the second half of the data presentation, I'll discuss our data in graphene coupled to superconducting electrodes. In particular, we observe superconducting proximity effect, and also some preliminary evidence for normal plasma mediated superconductivity. So, put a question mark here because our evidence are quite preliminary, so it's not conclusive yet. So let me just, I have to begin with this motivation, which I'm sure you have seen a thousand times already. As we know, graphene is a honeycomb lattice, which consists of two degenerate sublattices. And the band structure of both single and bilayer graphene are quite unique. The single layer is linear dispersion, resembles that of massless direct fermions. So this is great because we can do relativistic physics with a tabletop experiment. So for bilayer graphene, it resembles that of the zero band gap semiconductor. So a number of novel phenomena has been predicted and also observed in such systems, and I probably don't need to go to any detail for that. So technologically, graphene is important and interesting because it has advantage of carbon nanotubes, such as high thermal conductivity, high current density, high mobility, but like carbon nanotubes, it can potentially be compatible with lithographic techniques. So here I'd like to thank especially Professor Ward Yehia's group for pioneering this technique of epitaxially grown graphene. I think this is a great service to the community because without this, I cannot present this slide to funding managers with a strict face. So an example of the application is chemical biological sensor. So this here shows a preprint from Professor Gein's group, which shows that the sensor already has the ultimate sensitivity, that is, it can detect the desorption and absorption of a single molecule. So application of graphene is expected in the field of electronics, spintronics, and valutronics, latest sonics, I think.
Physics, the fourth one, which is missing pseudo-spintronics.
All right, let's add a part to that one.
No, that's bad. No, pseudo-spintronics is the AB, that's the other one. Your spin, the value, and then we have the... the ABC. Okay. Super skin chunks.
Great, okay. So now this is a slide where I paid tribute to the pioneers in the experimentalists, Professor Zhang's group and Professor Kim's group. So graphene was isolated for the first time in 2004. So a year later, this anomalous Hall effect with condensation of conductivity at half integer cells, which were over H, was discovered. And so this shows the linear energy momentum dispersion relation of the electrons. And since then, a number of nice experiments have been done. But compared to theoretical papers, it's still the number of experiments done is still quite limited. Last time I checked, there were about 280 papers on the condensed matter archive. I would say 99% of them are theoretical papers. And it's pretty hard for me to keep up with all this development. So our goal is to study graphene coupled to superconductors. So our initial goal is quite simple. We want to see, want to make a Josephson junction and in which we replace the normal Fermi liquid with the direct fermion system and see if we can observe a supercurrent. It turns out that we did not really observe supercurrent for reasons still unknown, but we did observe some other interesting phenomena, which I'm going to talk about now. So here is our device fabrication procedure. I just have to put it up to show this because it took a lot of time for us to do this. So the device are fabricated following the method of really high-tech mechanical exfoliation, in other words, rubbing the nitro graphite flakes onto silicon oxide substrate. We identify a number of layers by color interference in an optical microscope. And so here, where's the single layer graphene, it's actually this part is really, really faint. So this is, to untrained eye, is almost transparent. So identifying single layer graphene is actually the most time-consuming part of this sample fabrication. So here shows the bilayer graphene, which actually is much more easy to see. After I identify this graphene, we use our AFM to image them so that we can look for if there's any microscopic inhomogeneity, for example, maybe fold or defects in graphene, and we try to pattern our electrodes to avoid those areas. So after we identify the graphene, we put or use two studies electron beam lithography to fabricate the device. We first put down a London mark, here you see the numbers, and then we pattern electrodes on top of them. So the substrate is silicon substrate, degenerate doped to serve as a back gate. The electrodes consist of 10 nanometers of palladium and 70 nanometers of aluminum. So here we show some SEM images of our device. So the device are either fabricated in two terminal geometry, so like this, and in the Hall bar geometry, shown here. So our devices are measured in helium-3 refrigeration with highly filtered. I still don't know whether the filters work or not, but we have three stages of filters in the electrical lines. And the aluminum is superconducting, of course. So when we talk about normal electrodes, we either measure the samples at 1.5 Kelvin, which is about the transition temperature of aluminum, or we apply a small magnetic field to suppress the superconductivity in the aluminum. So this graph is just to show you that we confirmed our selection of single layer graphene by performing the quantum Hall measurement. The data was taken at 8 Tesla, and during the 16 millikelvin, we see this condensation of sigma
at 20. Why does it have this spike at zero? So sigma x I did not have the spike, which is cool.
Actually, what we measure is rho xy, which rho went through zero. And so when this is proportional over rho xy, which is, I think that comes from that singularity. We did add in the rho xx, but somehow it still shows up here.
Still shows up.
Yeah, so I don't think it's anything, it's not anything real. This is a workflow measurement.
You actually
the whole batch shape, so that I did not actually, I just find a large enough piece so that I can put six electrons on it.
country because ROEX is not well defined because the option is that
it's probably a little bit misaligned. So here, this was some data taken at 1.5 Kelvin, and we observed this bipolar field effect transistor behavior. So we show this bilayer single layer device, typical device behavior. And so both single and bilayer device, we note that this so-called direct point charge neutrality point actually varies from sample to sample. So for this one, it's actually minus 64. It's actually quite big. For this one, was minus 1, which actually, you know, very happy about that. So we see that this conductance and a functional gate voltage frequently display sublinear relationships, so like this. We do not right now have enough data points to, as Philip has done, to show this relationship between minimum conductivity and mobility. So that's something we're looking into.
It's one of the square roots,
I would
say.
This one? Square roots. We have not fitted, but it does look like that. Yeah, exactly. So actually, I would say most of data looks like this. So even this one shows some sublinear behavior. Actually, linear ones are relatively rare. Okay, so at the charge neutrality point, which is the minimum where the conductance happens, we can define the minimum conductivity as which is sigma minimum, as the length over width times the conductance minimum, where the width and the length are the are defined for this electrode thing. Most of you already know this so-called mystery of missing pi as coined by Antonio for the minimum conductivity. The theoretical prediction is that there should be a universal value of minimum conductivity at 4e squared over pi h. And if this is called universal, because it's expected to be dependent of Vf. So a number of theoretical papers have calculated that, so only just a few. And so the experimentally, so this shows an experiment. Experimental data from Professor Dine's group. So indeed, the universal value was fine, but must be a theorist nightmare. It's a different universal value, 4e squared over h. So this has been the cause of much debate in the community. So I'm trying to add my contribution to this field is that we try to so which measure values of minimum resistivity conductivity. It actually did not show any universal value inside ranges from 0.8 to 4.3 of GQ, which is for its work for the pi h theoretical value. So this shows just the distribution of the single and bilayer.
So your conductivity could be less than the universal one?
Yeah, it's about 0.83 of
This is for bilayer?
For single layer. So single layer, so this one is the red square is single layer. The triangle is the bilayer.
And so what's plotted for the vertical graph?
Oh, it's nothing. I just want to show the distribution.
So is this the only sample that shows conductivity lower than the universal one?
Unfortunately, this right now, that's only our sample.
Only your sample this.
My student promised me to give me more data right before this talk, but the sample blew up. So, I'm going to kill you.
I know it was confusing.
Yes.
I don't know much about this whole prehistory, but certainly if you would make your sample long compared to wide, you could get conductivity equal to zero at the Dirac point. Right? Why not? Everything will localize. So I'm not sure what this whole universality business means. I mean, it's universal in a certain well-defined range, at least I understand it only in systems which are wide compared to long. I'm convinced if you make it longer compared to wide, it will localize, it will go to zero. Why not? So. What's the point of finding small values?
Many body effects may suppress localization.
Yeah, everything could happen, but let's just first of all, you know, the obvious thing to expect is that if you make a thing long,
what is the localization length?
I mean, universal. So if you make it long compared to wide, it will be like a carbon nanotube, which unless you've chosen it with metallic edges, who knows?
Well, you're absolutely correct, but basically for some of us who are coming for universal, so like from Patrick Lee and Fradkin calculation, this is a thermodynamic statement. So what you're saying is beyond.
In fact, we do computer simulations, you know, just on the lattice with whatever stuff, and the only universality which I am convinced of, and I'm pretty sure it will be found if, you know, devices will approach that regime, is ballistic, wide compared to long.
I think I'm going to make it.
They're uncertain about the number, I mean, and whether the experiments on that. But certainly if it's long compared to wide, I don't even see why it will be like a carbon nanotube. So it will depend whether it's metallic or insulating. If it's metallic, you will find the 2B squared over H usual ballistic mode. And if it's insulating, then it will go to zero. You can get the expression.
I think actually that's what we find at least, data so far.
So, sorry, no, I got confused. So if you take a long wire and define it with long wire, why should it go to zero?
At
absolute zero. And at absolute zero, I wouldn't argue.
That's a zero point.
Temperature.
Okay, so there's hopping, I don't know, but as you lowered it.
No, let's talk about squares. You take one square centimeter, then 10 square centimeters, then take 1 mile.
Well, this geometry here seems to be not late. But it doesn't matter. I was just, you know, there was here some comment about where you could get something smaller than this number. I know precisely how to get it, just make it long compared to wire.
Actually, the.
I'm tempted to journey the statement because if we take a narrow wire and calculate with localization correction due to the intervalley scattering at the edge of the wire, we just get usual weak localization correction at any finite density. So at any finite density, you will get localization regime by default. Why would you have one single point which is excluded from that?
That's right.
Well, actually, our sample, which shows this sample, it's actually in the wide and short regime showing. I think that can just reflect the imperfect contact of, actually, if we just assume a contact is
itself. If you make it wide compared to short, you find something very close. I mean, 0.8, that's not argue about 0.8 before we have factors of free disagreement. If you make it wide compared to short, you find something which is very close, much closer than the earlier thing to the 1/5. So it's wonderful.
Actually, this shows up that we have discussion for too long, and my computer goes to sleep mode.
My switch is off to start.
We began stargazing. how is our experiment different from the previous experiment is that we have, one is that we have much smaller interelectrode spacing. It's only 100 to 400 nanometers. This is because we want to see super current. So we engineer the device edge. So this is a picture from Professor Nang's paper, and our device will actually be something around the square or smaller. So this is how big our device will look.
So what are the contents? Is it the white bars?
Oh, these are the palladium and aluminum contents.
And now I'm confused. I always thought that length was the, let's say, in the direction of the current.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think I
switched it.
Okay, that's right.
Carla, she's going to move your
seat. Yes, I can. Length is actually width, or you call width?
I apologize. I made this talk kind of last minute, so and we have larger aspect ratio. Our aspect ratio ranges from 2 to 8. So this is also again different from previous experiments. So in fact, a recent theoretical paper from Professor Mobinkis' group predicts that the minimum conductivity would depend on the device aspect ratio for ballistic piece of graphene and only approach this theoretical limit of 40 squared over pi h when aspect ratio is large enough. So here I'm just taking this equation from the paper. This is based on the Landau model. This Tn is the transmission coefficient for the nth channel, and you calculate the conductivity by summing all the conduction channels. So here's a theoretical curve, and our data actually follows very closely the curve. And so again, the red squares are single layer, and we know that double layer actually obviously lie on a different, that appears from lie on a different graph. when we say good agreement with data with no free parameters, which is great, but of course the cynic can say, oh, well, there's only one point, because take this point away. Okay, for this region, it's, again, we actually, this ranges from about 2.5 to 4 point something, so it's again, I would say, centered around 3.
That also implies that the system is very clean, because if you add this order, you change that figure very much.
Okay.
If you add this order in that theoretical calculation, in the L going to zero, to infinity, which is near 0, as Carlo was saying, you will get localization.
But our the electrical spacing is actually very short, so it's only 100 to 400 nanometers. I guess it's conceivable that it's you know, it can be a clean system over that.
How would you subtract contact resistance?
We did not subtract any contact resistance from this.
Why do you assume that it's 0?
Well, of course that's, we kind of assume it's 0, but I would just note that you know, we see devices with conductance as small, the system as small as 200 ohms when we dope it, you know, I mean, when we really crank up the gate voltage.
It's a direct point. What I'd like to point out, as you change gate voltage, your contact resistance is not stays constant with Elbit, it also increases. So at direct point, you get higher resistance of the contacts. And if you might want to plot those data as a function of assuming that there is additional contact resistance, and the shorter device you get, the larger your effective data would be. It's more contribution for short devices, because graphene starts playing less role, the contact starts playing more role, so that gives you a smaller value of conductivity. So, okay.
Sure, but I would say, actually, for I fully agree. But for this, point, you know, it's very, very short and wide and have very large contact area. So I would assume, for example, for this point, it's actually the contact resistance is smaller. But so, okay, we don't really know. We do not have independent confirmation on the contact resistance.
No, W is what? Is the width of
the length, actually. W is actually a length. You were mentioned before.
Yeah.
You should switch it around again.
I switched it.
So W is the length of graphene and... What's W?
W is the width.
So it's the length of the contact.
The length of the contact, so... So, our good agreement with theory, we suggest that our system can be pretty clean, and it can even be ballistic. So, I'm going to present some data which actually convinced me that it's a ballistic transport of electrons and holes in graphene. So again, I'd like to remind you that here we apply a magnetic field of 14 millitesla to suppress superconductivity in the aluminum electrode. So this data plot here shows the conductance, which is a color scale as a function of gate voltage, which is horizontal axis, and the bias voltage, which is vertical axis, which is in millivolts. And so the high conductance is represented by the yellow color, and low conductance is represented by the dark red color. And we can see that this two-dimensional plot displays a striking pattern of crisscrossing lines. So to help you to see that, I put this dotted line around there, which I think should be, I think it's actually quite obvious. And so this the bottom figure shows a line trip through the zero bias, which you can definitely see the peaks.
Where was it?
This is a zero bias.
Where was it?
Oh, this one is about minus 1.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I also say that everything we're going to present here, most of the data, are outside the direct point. So actually, the samples are moderately doped. So it's about, I would say, a few volts to say 12 or 15 volts away from the direct point. So we see a periodic conductance oscillation as functions of both gate location bias.
Can I ask you, so what is this dashed line on the yellow overlay there?
This, oh, and this this is, I put it on so that, for example, connecting all the maximum or minimum to help you show that it's periodic.
If I take this out, would NBC be able to see it as periodic?
I think so.
Or a suggestion.
Let's see. Yes, I probably don't have that.
It's only a PowerPoint slide when you take it out.
Unfortunately, that one is it's stuck. So let's see if I can go to the first one. So I think this is that.
Right.
Well.
Would a two-dimensional Fourier transform pick it up too?
Yeah,
that's for sure. If you want a Fourier transform, it will always pick it up. If it's even if it's not there.
Yeah, it's my film.
Well, I have not tried that, but I would imagine it would.
So how many diamonds like that did you see?
So it varies from device to device. And so actually I sweep a lot of things under the rug. It's actually, we see what I'm going to talk about later, which we see different periods and different diamonds. So some can have a lot of diamonds, some have a few diamonds, and we have different periods too at different gate locations. So it actually can be a quite complicated pattern. So this is just showed another device, so it's actually, and we take the line through here, it shows this so this is a field effect change of the conductance on top of this background. We see this periodic wiggles. So this is a robust phenomenon. We observed in every single device with very good contact, and for both single and bilayer devices, and for both pole and electron dose regime. Again, what we're talking about is away from the direct point. So at the direct point, the patterns become very complicated. we do not understand that yet. So similar oscillation, periodic oscillation with gate rotation bias was actually observed in carbon nanotubes. So here we show, this was first reported by Hong Kong Park group at Harvard. And so here we show data from my own lab, which you will see this almost checkerboard patterns of high and low conductance oscillation. So in carbon nanotubes, these patterns are attributed to the quantum interference of electron electron waves because the interference between two partially transmitting electrodes and multiply reflected paths interfere to give rise to a constructive and destructive interference. The electron's wavelength can be changed by either the bias or by the gate voltage. And so in a sense, so we believe this similar explanation can be applied to our data, that is where CMA graphene acting as a parallel resonant cavity and supporting ballistic and phase coherent transport actually over relatively large distances. So I'd like to point out one key difference between our data and those data in nanotubes. In a nanotube, you usually only find one period. So it's very clean period. And so if you measure from the zero bias to this point, this is the energy scale E0. And given by HPF over 2L, where L, in the case of nanotubes, is given by inter-electrode spacing. And here, I take the data from, again, Hong Kong Park's paper, and shows that this energy scales with the inter-electrode spacing for the nanotubes. And so, but for graphene, things actually are much more complicated. We usually observe more than one period, for example, and outlining here a small period by the dotted line, by the dashed line, and the larger period by the dotted line. And so, we have not been able to establish any quantitative relationship between this energy scale, energy scales. With any characteristic length. I imagine it could be inter-electrode spacing, or because of Klein paradox, it may be related to the size of the hole whole graphene plate we're testing, maybe it's related to the even the angle, incident angle of the electrons and holes. So we really ran out rational facts about that. So the difference is just that the electron paths in one-dimensional nanotubes are very well defined, so between two points, but in this two-dimensional graphene can be very well, very complicated, and different resonator modes can be excited with different characteristic energies. I just like to point out that the smallest energy scale we observe is about 0.7 milli electron volts, and this corresponds to a, if you take the 2L, charge coherence length of greater than 5 microns. So it shows that the graphene can actually support ballistic transport over relatively large distances. So now I'm going to switch gear and talk about graphene type of the smooth, not an electrode in our case. We simply set the magnetic field to zero. So the goal is to fabricate a Josephine junction with massless direct fermion as a normal metal. There are a lot of quite a few theoretical interest in this area. For example, we expect to see spectral and drift reflection, excitation gap of graphene channels, and novel propagating mode, oscillation of the cone probability with barrier width. This is derived from the train paradox again. We want to see supercurrent, but we do not. So again, this is the data from the normal electrode at 50 millitesla, and show here we show vertical trace, which is, so shows the differential conductance as a function of bias voltage through one of the valleys. And now we turn off this magnetic field. What do we see? We see this pattern of interference persists. But
the bias there is volts or millivolts?
Sorry, millivolts. Thank you. So it's in millivolts. We turn off, but we see a few additional features. So we'll just go through these features one by one. So the first feature, the feature in the center around this red band, corresponds to higher conductance. So I show here, again, we have at the same, so it will be around here. Same gate voltage, we see that instead of a dip, we see a enhanced conductance at low bias. And this, especially this enhanced conductance happens at bias smaller than 200 microvolts. Sometimes it happens at about 100 microvolts. This we attribute to the superconducting proximity effect. And we can look at the, if we examine this zero bias conductance at a detail, we see that actually it's not one single peak, it actually consists of three peaks. There's a peak at zero bias, and this has been observed before again in nanotubes, for example by Lindelof's group, and was attributed to actually supercurrent. Similar zero bias conductance peak was actually also observed in other SNS junctions. And we have these two side peaks happens at about half of the superconducting gap. And so it's about, it's actually smaller than the gap of aluminum, it's about 50, actually it changes from sample to sample about 30 to 70 microvolts. And this is so-called sub-gap structure, and was usually attributed to multiple entry reflection happening at the normal metal superconductor interface. And further proof that this arises from the superconductivity in aluminum is provided by the magnetic field measurement. Here we show this again the conductance part as a function of the bias. And a magnetic field, this now we're sitting at one particular gate voltage. And we can see that, so this shows these three red bands are these three peaks, and you can see that they disappear at about 19 millitesla. So I'd like to just say that the similar low bias conductance peaks was reported in a very recent preprint on Mark archive, showing in the superconductor contact with Dulé graphene. This is work. That work was done by a French group, I would say. So now let's. I'd like to turn our attention to these structures, these red lines at higher bias, and this happens. So which at this plot as a function of bias, so it corresponds to these species. And so this is the happens at voltage much higher than the gap of aluminum, which for bulk of aluminum is about 200 microvolts, and this species happens ranges from sample to sample and happens from about half a millivolt to actually even as high as 3 millivolts. So here we show the data at roughly 2 millivolts. So they're independent of gate voltage, and they're not observed to for devices with resistance about higher than 20 kilo ohms. So this is actually a very, very strange, because you know, what can correspond happen to that behavior? What can so we tantalizing clue is given by the study of, again, as a function of bias and magnetic field. So here we show the conductance as a function of bias magnetic field. This remind you, this is just a zooming plot of this region, the high resolution scan of this region. And here we show, so this band, so these are the conductance dips. And we can see that although this zero bias conductance peaks disappear at about 19 millitesla, this guys, the dips, the bulk guide dips, disappear at higher, especially this one, disappear at higher magnetic field. Actually, it was about 30 millitesla. We can feed that to the formula for that corresponds to the gap dependence on magnetic field of a superconductor. So this is a formula taken from the 1964 paper. That this was derived, actually was for aluminum, but it's general for can work for a lot of superconductor same things. And we just directly take the gap zero from here and HC zero from here. And so we take this 2 points for our data and fit the entire curve with this formula. So this actually would indicate, at least preliminary evidence, for a presence of a superconductor with a higher TC than aluminum.
So could you show the feature and the time and characteristic?
Okay.
Could you show the feature and the GIDV that would correspond to this gap?
Different GIDV.
Yes. Yeah, so which one?
So the one which we fit to is the highest one, which would be this one.
So this is a dip.
Yes, this is a dip. So remember this
would be corresponding to superconducting gap.
It looks like there's something with a high. Looks like we have some superconductor there with a higher TC than aluminum, say about 4 Kelvin.
You're tracing the dip as a function of the field, which is a parabolic. It's fine. But then you're saying that this dip, you use a formula for a superconducting gap.
Yes.
And it corresponds to the dip in your tunneling conductance, right?
It's, well, I won't say tunneling conductance, but the differential conductance.
Differential conductance. Oh, I see. Maybe.
So we trace how it moves in magnetic field. It moves to, this dip happens at small, it moves towards zero at higher and higher magnetic field.
Yeah, maybe there is something about the club peak, whatever, the Tinkham stuff, but
the BTK.
Yeah, but otherwise, basically, is there more evidence why the superconducting gaps? Other than the fact that it actually moves with the magnetic field quadratically?
Well, the fact that we see this, okay, well, right now we do not have any explanation why this happens, and this actually disappears at higher temperature as well. And so this kind of motivates us to study the dependent magnetic field, and I think it's preliminary evidence for that. If you have any other explanation,
you can let me know. Applied field in the plane, would it change it?
We did not conduct anything. Right now everything's perpendicular.
Okay.
Maybe, what can you add that for aluminium, since it's quite well known that their temperature does correspond to about 1.3 or something, it can go easily to 3-4 Kelvin.
Especially granular ones.
Of aluminium, they as a rule have much higher temperature.
Right, but I guess I will argue that it's definitely possible. I will argue because this enhanced conductance disappears at a lower magnetic field.
I argue that you have two types of aluminium inside, one who is high GC and one who is low GC, which is also quite.
So, but then, because you looked at the aluminum films, whether it dips in the differential conductance?
I don't know.
Yeah, this is, I would say, quite puzzling for us. We do not pretend we understand this completely.
You know, one way to say that this feature follows the parabolic dependence on magnetic fields. But the feature, we don't know the nature of this feature.
The superconductivity follows.
Sure, exactly. But the question is whether it's even connected to superconductivity.
Well, I'm just right now saying it's a preliminary evidence. Of course, and when I talked to Antonio, I was actually afraid that he would say I'm crazy. But Antonio said, no, he's crazy. they actually have a paper out. About the superconductivity in metal coated graphene. So this paper was performed, assuming an alkaline metal atom. But when I talked to Antonio, he started talking about, well, I think transition metals are actually better. And I said, well, in that case, at the risk of something crazy, let me tell you, we have this palladium contacted graphene sample and shows this funny behavior. So, in this case, Antonio predicted that the superconductivity is mediated by plasmons. And I say our experiment is possible to initial superconductivity, but we need to conduct many more experiments to verify that.
I'm very sorry. Just basically on the previous one again, it's fine. You can keep the slide. On this one, if I look at the negative one, mm-hmm. would it be the same value of the gap?
Yes.
Negative bias.
Mm-hmm.
It follows exactly the same dependence.
Yes.
It would. It doesn't look like.
Well, sort of. Maybe it's a little bit different.
Maybe I'm sitting so.
I would say it may be a slight difference, but I would say it's very.
Okay.
Yeah.
For what density hasn't been measured?
What do you mean?
What density? What gate voltage?
Oh, this was at. So this is about 10, maybe 12 volt away from direct point.
Do you get the same pictures if you change from N type to P type?
Yes.
Yes, sir. The critical field rigorously will define for you the coherent length of whatever superconductor you have there. But how do you go from the coherent length to the gap? Do you need a Fermi velocity?
I just take it directly from here. I'm not. So this here, I have two parameters. I'm taking delta 0 and HC 0. Take point here.
It's a parabola.
Yeah.
Parabola?
Sort of. So I stick my neck out a little bit and say it's preliminary evidence. I don't stick my neck out too much, just a micron or so. So let me just conclude. We're doing okay. So we investigate phase coherent transfer of charges in single bilayer graphene. And here are our conclusions. I think our achievement, but actually for each achievement, it brings more questions that needs to be answered. And so this testifies to this rich physical complexity of the system and its fascinating behavior. So for minimum conductivity, we will want to measure device obviously with different aspect ratios, also different inter-electrical spacing. Also, conductivity in bilayer graphene is another interesting question for us. So for the graphene, it's quantum Hilliard. Uh, we we know that graphene actually could, it's actually open billiard because the electrons can actually come out and bounce back around the edges and come back again. And so it didn't come out very well, but it shows the complicated patterns at a direct point. So I would say more experimental effort would be, and possibly theoretical effort might be necessary to really understand this behavior. We also proximity effect in graphene coupled with superconductors. We did not see any supercurrent, but although supercurrent was recently observed by more cool goes through at belt. We do not know why, because the supercurrent reported is as large as 700 nanoamps, which I think even in our set, Delft obviously had probably better fridge and better filter lines, which I freely admit, but I would say for 700 nanoamps, our fridge should be able to measure it. So we are trying very hard to see if we can measure any supercurrent. And of course, all these theoretical predictions, we are interested to need to acknowledge my group, which is my grad student, Feng Miao, who has been the driving force behind this, and his undergraduate student, Sutera, who has been very patient and rubbed graphene for hours and hours and hours and looked for them in the microscope. And so to my two postdocs, Yong and Wulash, have contributed to fabrication and measurement. Thank you.